Hey guys, this is not our normal sort of podcast put out on Sunny 16 or even Sunny 16 Presents. This is not going to be a show about photography, although it is a show about a photographer. Long-time listeners of the Sunny 16 podcast will have noticed that over the last 12 to 18 months, Rachel has been absent from the podcast quite a lot. Specifically at certain times, she's been gone for quite a while, and you know, we said at the time she's been very busy and there's been various other things going on, but there was more to it than just that. And we've got to a point now where Rachel was ready to talk about this stuff. So I sat down with her to have a chat about it and just let you know. So if you care about Rachel and who she is and what she does and want to know why she's been more absent over the last year than she's been here, this is where you'll find out. But I need to give a content warning. The reason she's been absent is that the last 18 months have been very difficult for Rachel. Our conversation is about Rachel and her partner's Adam's attempts to have a child through IVF, and part of that story is loss. So if you think that this is going to be too difficult for you to listen to because of that, then please know in advance. But also know in advance that we wouldn't be doing this if Rachel wasn't in a good enough place to be having this conversation. So bear that in mind too. Why are we doing this? Well, two reasons really. First off, the film community, the analog photography community, is a lovely and close-knit community, and many people over the last year have asked after Rachel and been in touch, just saying, oh, everything okay? We know you've not been around. What's going on? And so we wanted to let people know, because this is a very caring community, which is one of the most fantastic things about it. We are one big family, all of us, not just the Sunbeams, but our extended family and everybody in the shoot film community. The other reason is because Rachel is not alone in going through these experiences, but at times it felt very much like she was, and so she wanted to get this out there so that other people in the same situation might not feel quite so isolated. So anyway, as I said at the beginning, not a podcast about photography, but a podcast about Rachel. Well, it doesn't have to be a blah, 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 blah. So I figured we just chat about stuff. Because, I mean, like, I suppose as much as anything, we want to just fill listeners in on the last...
I'm still alive.
You're still alive. Yeah, because it's incredible. We went from... last, you know, I suppose in the run-up to last Christmas, you know, you and I were doing backing paper pretty much every week, and you were on the podcast every week, and then obviously January and February, you just weren't there. Should we maybe, like, let's start with just talking about the run-up to that time. Because I suppose that's a good place to start the story, isn't it? Like, so go for it.
Oh, we're recording, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's
I
totally just forgot about that. Oh God, Graham. I'm sorry. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to start this.
It's hard. This is the whole thing. So okay. When was it you got in touch with me about this? Was it September? Was it September? About to let me know that you were starting.
Oh yeah. So God. I think we had the original letter in June to say that we could go ahead. Like that they were giving us two rounds.
Yeah.
Of IVF. So but obviously it would have to be done by my 40th birthday.
Yeah, and this is last year. So your birthday's in October.
No, this was last year? This wasn't last year.
No,
this
last year. Sorry, the year before. Yeah, I'm bringing it. So your birthday's
I know,
October.
Right?
Yeah.
And November.
Sorry, yeah, Bob, bad me, sorry? Bad me. So, and you were so in 2019, you were turning 39. In November, and in September, was it September you said you got the letter saying
June?
Sorry, God, my dates ability is really out the window.
That's all right.
In June, you got the letter saying
summer 2019.
You got the letter saying you can have two rounds of IVF. Because how long had you been trying before you went down the route of IVF?
A couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but obviously because of my age,
the clock's ticking.
Yeah, clock's ticking, especially after 35. So that was the point where it was like going, realizing this isn't working, this isn't happening, you know, and kind of thinking, at what point do we go and speak to medical people about this, you know, and what are the options? And it kind of, when I actually made that first inquiry about that, it was like, okay, we'll refer you to, you know, speak to a consultant and stuff. And at that first meeting, I have to say that first meeting was horrendous. Like, I felt so kind of like bamboozled by everything, and was basically just like, yeah, so we need to get you on this like right now, because for me, I felt like I didn't have any autonomy over it. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any kind of, it was like, no, we just need to get you on the list. And I realized that it was because of my age and everything, but we hadn't really even discussed it properly at that point. You know, it was like, we thought this was just going to be a little conversation about, you know, how does this, you know, work? Can we get some help in some way? What are the other options and things? They were like, no, let's get you on the list for IVF, which I understood looking back at it, like reflecting on it, because the clock was ticking and they know how long this whole process was going to take. And actually, I am grateful looking back that that is what they did.
Yeah.
But at the time, it just felt so overwhelming and so like, oh my God, so we're going down this route. And honestly, like, nothing can prepare you for going through something like IVF, because even speaking to other people who've been through it, it's brutal. It's really brutal. It's not been fun. You know, I never expected it to be fun. But I don't think I was prepared for how challenging it was going to be psychologically, emotionally, as well as physically. Like, the physical side of things, I knew obviously it wasn't going to be pleasant, but I was kind of okay with that. Like, yeah, you do what you've got to do, you know. But it was the other side of things that really, really got to me. And I think it was also because it brought up a lot of stuff for me with losses in my life and other things, you know, that kind of came along with that I wasn't expecting it to drag up, I suppose. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't expecting it to bring those things back to the foreground for me. And it did, and it hit me out of the blue. I wasn't expecting that reaction, I don't think, to it.
Like, talk us, not in detail, but just broadly through what those early, so you got the letter through in June, what the next steps were, and because essentially from my outsider's point of view, like, it seems to me like they just take the chemical factory that is your body and shake it violently to try and make it do what you want. So like, what happened from the letter in June onwards?
Yeah, so at that point, then it's basically lots of meetings and things you have to go through. You have to sign loads of documents. I mean, you get a binder like this, you know, it's like an inch and a half of all the information, all the things that this can do to you, all the things that, you know, to consider with it, how it's going to work. Like, the whole process is so involved. And like, you get that, and then you have what they call like your teach session, where they basically teach you how to administer all the drugs. It was like I sent you a photo of like the first lot as like a box. It's like it's about a 3-foot box, like 3-foot square box, just full of drugs. Various things that you've got to take at various times on various days at particular points as you're going through the process, and they have to be so timed, like to the hour, on every day, and you know, or to the half hour or to the minute, you know, on some of them.
We had to had to be really careful with like doing podcast scheduling, yeah. especially backing papers. Like, okay, we have to be finished by this time because I have to have this injection at this specific time. So yeah. we need to. It's crazy the specificity of how. I mean, talk about cause of stress right from the beginning.
Yeah. So yeah, and things like this one, you have to mix yourself. You know, that kind of stuff. So you have to allow like 20-minute kind of like lead-in time. So it's like okay. Adam would be there like getting the syringe ready and getting the other bit of the drug ready, and then he'd mix it up knowing that I was going to be finishing the podcast at this time, or I'd just have to go so that I could have that injection, you know, because and then obviously, you know, you can have reactions to those as well. And the main kind of like one of the main side effects, I was lucky in that like I didn't, none of it was rejected, if you like, thankfully. But you do get to the point where you honestly just feel like a proper overstuffed cushion, like, or an overstuffed sofa, like you can't really move and things. And at that point, I think, especially at the beginning point, it is all still a new adventure. You know, it's still kind of like, okay, well, we're doing this, and we're quite planny people, you know, like, okay, if we do this step and then this step and then this step, that will happen, right? Or that's mm-hmm. the process. And I think probably reflecting on it, that's the difficulty, because obviously we knew there's no guarantees and things, but it's a disappointment, and it's the uncertainty that when you layer it over time, over, you know, days and weeks and months and years, it builds up, and that's the difficult part, really. Went through all the injections, all the drugs, all the, you know, things. So as a kind of like period of time, it was probably a couple of months, I suppose, of that. Funnily enough, like going through the second lot, we both thought, God, this seems a lot quicker, you know, than it did the first time around. But yes, yeah, it's just your perception of time is different as well. That was the first lot. And then eventually I then had to, obviously there were various scans and things, because they have to check how everything's growing or not growing, or how many are in each side, and, you know, all these kinds of things. And then there's a point where it's like, okay, well, you're going to have the operation to collect the eggs and things. And that is not a nice operation. It took me quite a while to recover from it. I knew it wasn't going to be pleasant, but I don't think I was expecting to be completely knocked out for it, you know, but it's quite invasive, I suppose.
Yeah.
When you think about it, you go, of course it's going to be invasive, but yeah. That happened. And then it's that waiting over that like next week to find out how many have been collected from that, how many have survived from that, how many have fertilized from that, how many have got to day two, day three, day five, you know, and are there any that they're going to put back in, or are they just going to freeze more, or what? And then I had to have another operation and in between as well, because there was something else that they were like, oh, this might be stopping it, you getting pregnant and things. So there was all of that happening too. When we had for that first cycle, we were expecting it to be, well, we've been told, you'll go in, you'll have the egg collection, and we'll do the transfers from frozen eggs in the new year, in the January.
Yeah.
And then on the like third day, they called up and said, you've got three that are fertilized and have survived and are at a good stage. So we're going to freeze two of them and we're going to put the other one in on Monday. And I was like, wait, what?
So when was this race? Was that early December?
That was middle of November.
November.
Yeah, middle of November. So we were actually in having our first egg collection on my birthday. So I was in hospital on my birthday. Adam and I both have the same birthday. So it caused quite a lot of, obviously, comment in the hospital. It was like, oh, well, what a lovely birthday I'm having. And the other thing was, obviously, we hadn't told anybody about like this, like literally nobody. It was only Adam and I knew. He knew. But yeah, and so,
ironically me as well.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Ironically. Yeah, that's so weird.
it is a little weird. I mean, I'm very flattered, but yeah, it's weird.
Yeah, well, not really. But anyway, it was, it was our birthday. And obviously we couldn't tell anybody. So it was like, oh, you did plans for birthday, blah, blah, blah. Because if you remember, this was before the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
All that time ago. So that was fun, trying to like hide all of that. And then working around work, obviously, was the main thing, because there were things planned in, there were things booked in, and you can't change any of, you know, whatever's happening there has to take precedence. But equally, it means that you're in a situation where you can't tell people the reasons why, just that you can't. And I'm so bad. I cannot lie. I'm just such a terrible person for that.
Mm.
And I found it really difficult. But yeah, so on our birthday, that's what we were doing. We did have some bubble tea there. That was nice. So yeah. And it was, yeah. And then we found that, oh God, we're going back in next week and they're going to, so they wanted it on Monday. And they were like, well, no, this has to happen now. I was like, oh man. So all these like training things that I was supposed to be delivering, I suddenly had to like figure out what I was going to do, you know, to like around that. And yeah, so we went and had our first transfer, which was fresh, what they call an FET. That was a fresh transfer. An FET is a frozen embryo transfer. And then we happened to be away with some friends when we were due to take the test, because you just, you know, they basically pop it back in. That bit's fine. You know, that bit's not like a problem. Although it's a weird kind of like almost feeling like you're going, I don't know, like to the shops or something, and then they send you out. It's really bizarre. After that, we were given the date, like, this is when you can take the test and see if it's worked. And we happened to be away with friends that weekend. And so, took the test in the morning and it worked. And I was like, oh, my God, like, first, you know, go of this, considering obviously nothing previously had worked. It was just amazing. So we decided not to tell the people who we were there with, because, you know, we just weren't sure about it all, and it was all very new, and it was still quite nice to kind of like keep it for us, as like a little secret. It did mean like it didn't get to go in the hot tub though, which I was gutted about. Because that would have been nice, but you know, small things. And I'd made sure I'd taken a load of non-alcoholic stuff. So there's interesting things where you're like, oh no, it's because I'm just not up for that at the moment. So that was all great, lovely. We were really excited and everything. And then we had our scan on Christmas Eve, which fell on Christmas Eve, which is great. And went along for our scan, and they said that unfortunately the baby's heart had stopped beating and it had stopped growing. So yeah, effectively I was having a miscarriage, even though I hadn't yet actually lost the baby. So it was really tough.
It's such a weird thing. This whole thing, like the IVF, all of it. You know that the chances are not high, but you can't go through what you're going through without hope. You can't, because otherwise you wouldn't go through it. And
And I had a wedding that I was going to be shooting on, New Year's Eve. Oh, and I was like, I remember being in the hospital. Yeah, I remember them telling me that, and just, you know, I think how the hell am I going to do this? You know, like, I couldn't cancel. It was like the week before, you know, and then being absolutely terrified the whole time I was shooting this wedding that I was going to end up in the hospital, you know, or because we didn't know when the baby was going to, you know, I was going to actually lose the baby. So I was just terrified that I was going to end up in a heap, you know, in the middle of the ceremony or something. So, I don't quite know, looking back at it, how I managed to do it, but I did. I went and shot the wedding. And it was a lovely day, actually. I think almost in a way it hadn't quite hit me at that point what was happening, you know. They booked me into to have a managed miscarriage, basically, because I hadn't naturally lost the baby, if you like. They were going to have to take it out of me. They booked me in for the beginning of January. So it was like the first week of January. So obviously we found out on Christmas Eve. Obviously had to get through Christmas and then shoot a wedding on New Year's Eve. And then go into the hospital like 3 days later, 4 days later. To actually have the miscarriage there. So they give you a load of drugs, basically, to make you lose the baby. It was traumatic. It is a traumatic experience. Even though obviously for us it was early on, the baby would have been like 7-8 weeks or something at that point. It's not pleasant to go through, definitely. And you're not sedated for that or anything, unfortunately, either. So it's just something you have to go through, really. So it's like a whole day in the hospital with that. Things like they ask you, you know, like, what do we do with the remains? And you have to, you know, sign for cremation or what have you. So there's all these other things that you would never normally consider or think about, I guess, that are really hard decisions to make, especially when you're going through that, you know, itself. From that, obviously, it took me a little while physically to heal from that, but I was okay, thankfully. I had a really good team. They were amazing, you know, looked after us both so well. I think I was like, okay, well, when can I get back to work? Because, like, for me, I was thinking that's going to be the main thing for me that will keep me distracted and keep me kind of able to just sort of like put my blinkers on and keep going. And, you know, I was like, when can I get back to work? Because I knew I had so much else coming up. Obviously, you know, these things have been planned months in advance, the stuff that I knew that I was going to be having in January, February, March, etc., all the way through pretty much like into the summer months. And then my whole world just fell apart.
Yeah. As a friend seeing this from the outside, it was spectacularly hard to see you so far away, and it destroyed you. I mean, it was really hard to see because I don't think any of us could ever have imagined the devastating mental hit it took on you. January and February were yeah. really rough months. Really rough months. They were.
And I think, you know, like they said to me in the hospital, you know, probably need to give yourself like 6 weeks or what have you, you know. And I was like, only 6 weeks, you know, it's fine, it's done, you know, like I was trying to say move on, but it doesn't work like that.
No. And as you said, you want to get to back to work and to bury your head in it, but the nature of the stuff that you do, it's not like you have a 9-to-5 job you can just go to, be a drone, do it, and
I would like to.
Yeah, you are your work. You bring your and being self-employed and all of these things, it makes it all so much harder. So you're having to try and deal with this devastating.
I couldn't tell anybody either.
Yeah, and you couldn't, and also obviously, couldn't talk to anyone about it. You couldn't say to somebody, "Look, I just can't because of this."
So, trying to figure a way of holding my business together still whilst going through that and not having realised how much of an impact it would have on me was quite hard. Because, yeah, although obviously I could have said, you know, to people, well, this is what's happened. Even just saying that was just awful. Like, it was so painful to just talk about it, you know, at all at that time. And honestly, like, I really ummed and ahed about, like, because obviously at the time, as you were saying earlier, Graham, we were talking about, we were doing back in paper like every week, and, you know, and I was there on the shows and everything, and then I wasn't, and I really seriously thought, should I talk about this, right? Because this is a major thing, and it's not something that is talked about, honestly, a lot. I think more now, so, you know, like a couple of other people have more recently, who are high profile, have talked about it a bit. I'm thinking like, Prince Harry's wife, Meghan, mm-hmm. she talked about it relatively recently, just before Christmas, I think. And I don't tend to read much of that sort of stuff, to be honest, but I did think her piece was really good, actually. It was the first time somebody had written something that I felt resonated, and that kind of like described that indescribable pain, I think, but yeah, so in general, I guess it's like, it's a bit like, in a way, you know, being a woman working in film photography, you know, there's a lot more of us now than there were, but we're still, you know, not as visible and things. And just in general, I felt a responsibility to perhaps talk about it. And I was seriously going to do that. And then I realized that I wasn't in the right headspace to do that at the time. I mean, you know, we're 2 years on now, and you know, it doesn't leave you, you know.
Yeah.
It's still very difficult to talk about that also because of where things are now, you know. And Adam wasn't in the right place for us to talk about it either, you know, and this is a team effort. So,
and hanging over all of this is the fact that the clock hasn't stopped ticking. Just because your world has completely fallen apart, that clock hasn't stopped ticking. So you find yourself in February 2020, around then, and you're in an incredibly low place. But you still have to be thinking about what to do next. And I know, as a friend, I was worried, because seeing how badly you were affected by it. I mean, it was awful to see from the outside. It was really heartbreaking to see, and I was worried that if you move forward and try it again, that if it happens again, what's left of my friend? What I don't think your psyche could have taken another blow like that. But this is something which is really important to you, and how do you balance that? How do you mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you were always quite determined, weren't you? You were even. Did you ever think about just giving up on it completely?
No. Because, no. If I'm going to do something, I've got to see it through. You know, like, there were still some options. There was still some choice. Like, we knew that there were two other eggs that we'd had frozen that we could, you know, look at, you know, using and things. And I knew I wasn't in the right place at that time. I thought I would be. I was like, how soon can we try with the next egg, you know? And they were like, you need to give yourself at least 6 weeks and we'll do a psychological assessment kind of thing. And it became clear, because I was still in shock, honestly. I was just literally in shock and in denial about it all, obviously. And we went to see the consultant and I just cried the whole way through. And he was like, you are not ready for this, quite clearly. And there was just the stress and the pressure and the worry about, like you say, that clock was still ticking. I was, by that point, 2 months older. You know, I was getting closer to my 40th birthday, you know, all of these things. When I was like, we have to, because the amount of time that it has to wait, you can only obviously try like once each month, and you've got to wait until your body is able to try, you know, for it to work. It has, you have to, again, be testing every day, find out when you're at the right point, make sure that they can fit you in on the list to have the transfer, all of these things. So this was sort of like, obviously I was like, okay, well, it felt like wasted so much time, you know. By this point it was the end of February, so I was like, I won't be able to try until the middle of March, and then there's only like 6 months left till my birthday, you know, like what if neither of these work, and oh, you know, all of this. And then we got hit by a global pandemic, and literally everything shut, and I was like, obviously devastated from, you know, from all the shall I say usual perspectives, you know, like, oh my God, our whole world has just, for everybody, has just completely turned upside down. How do we deal with this? I don't know. Combined with the fact that, is my business going to survive this, considering the last 3-4 months that we've had, and knowing that all of my earnings pretty much for that year, for my weddings and everything, were all cancelled.
Yeah.
Like, everything was shut. Like, there was no way I could do any of the workshops that I'd got planned in that I was supposed to be delivering. And all of the treatment center was completely closed, like indefinitely.
Some ways, it was almost a double-edged sword though, wasn't it, with this? Yeah. Because yes, all of the things you've just said, and very specifically all the treatment centers stopping. But the fact that everything stopped, and the fact that in May, because of the self-employed help that was out there, you were able to get money to help keep the business going, it did actually give you a window of time to heal from what was going on, in a way that I think if you hadn't had that time, because, you know, you have a part-time job as well as all the stuff that you're trying to do for yourself, and all of that came to a stop, and it gave you some breathing room to recover a little bit. But then that is balanced out by the fact that, yes, you just didn't know. I mean, we were talking in May, and you just don't know whether you're going to get any chance again. Will the mechanisms for doing this kick back into life before you turn 40 or not? So, I mean,
and in enough time for us to potentially try with the other two eggs that we've got, like, because knowing that really for each of those you need kind of like 3 months, a month before, month of it, and then a month after for your body to, you know, get back into the right place to try again if it doesn't work. So we were rapidly running out of time. And with that.
And it felt like you weren't getting much information either at that time, because nobody knew what was going on.
Literally nobody was there. Nobody knew what was going on. It's not their fault, you know, but as far as they knew, just it's indefinite. We don't know when we will open again. It was it's really stressful. Like, your whole choice of being able to do this might just be completely taken away by something completely out of your control. Like, yeah. All of this is out of your control anyway. And adding in that element, it was like, I'm not even going to get the chance, you know, to do this. It was really hard to get my head around and to accept, I think. Yeah, it was tough.
So when was it you started hearing actually positive and forward-moving things coming? When was that? Was that June, July?
August.
August? It really is late as August. Holy moly.
Yeah. We heard, so obviously in March, obviously it was just nothing. Mm-hmm. Because they had to go through this whole heap of like particular, wait for the legislation to come in, wait for the new procedures to be put in place. Then they had to go through a whole vetting thing, each individual department, to make sure that they were safe to reopen and everything. So we actually heard in, I think in July actually, that they would be able to reopen. And there was this whole kind of like thing of, because the first one had worked and then we'd lost the baby, I actually wasn't on the list. I'd sort of fallen through the gap of, I'm not actually due to be having another one, if you know what I mean. Like, we hadn't got to the point where it was like, oh, that particular month you were supposed to be going in and having your transfer done on this particular date and stuff. So it was just, yeah, hard. So there was quite a few battles of being like, no, I'm supposed to be on the list. We need to do this like now, get this done. You're right, actually, Graham. It must have been a bit earlier than that, because we tried. Yeah, we did have two frozen. And so we went in, and once it reopened and I'd managed to get on the list and I managed to like persuade them to let me in that first month that they could possibly let me in. So we went and had the next frozen embryo transfer, and then had the, again, agonizing 2 weeks to wait to see if it worked, and it hadn't. Which I think was just a big, at that point, was obviously a big blow over again, because I thought, as the first one had worked, you know.
You have an expectation, yeah.
Yeah, the expectation is that hopefully the next one will, and it didn't. And so we were like, okay, let's go for it next month as well. We've got one left, might as well. And we got to the day, because you also have like calls the day before and then on the day, like an hourly thing, yeah, as they're defrosting them. To see whether they've survived, whether they're reanimating, all this kind of stuff. And they called us and said, it's not moving. Like, it's alive, but it's not moving.
Yeah.
So we would say, as it has defrosted and it's there, we should still go ahead, and we might as well go ahead and do the transfer, but it's quite unlikely. And so, at this point, I was like, okay, well, yeah, of course we'll go in and we'll have it done. But it was going in and having it done, knowing pretty much that this wasn't going to work.
Yeah. You know? So was this all in August?
Our last one. Yeah, so that would have been, yeah, August. And then it was like, okay, well, we need to figure out what happens next then, because I need to get through this next lot of drugs for the second lot,
yeah,
of treatment before I hit my birthday. Yeah. Thankfully, they said, as long as you've started them before you're 40, that's okay. So we were like, okay, there was no point that we were able to like pause and stop. It was like, okay, just going to have to go straight back into, been in for all these scans and all these transfers, blah, 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 and we're just gonna have to start this round of drugs again, yeah, like this whole cycle again. because otherwise we won't be able to do that. So, and this is all obviously in the middle of crazy signing contracts every time you go into the hospital, having to basically shield like the whole year because you know that you're going into a place that is the place that you don't want to be going, you know, and potentially bringing stuff out of a place as well that you could pass on to other people, all whilst trying to like make sure that, you know, I'm still trying to do the things as obviously because lockdown had sort of lifted.
Yeah, this is September, October now, isn't it? There's a lot more.
And people were obviously, you know, like wanting me to, you know, work, obviously do other, you know, things. It was like there's projects, there's different things coming up. And I was having to make these decisions where I was like, can I do that? Like, I probably can't do that. Still not being able to really tell people why I couldn't do it. Having to turn down work when I hadn't had an invoice paid since February. Like you say, thankfully I was able to apply for the SICE grant. So at least there was that. But, you know, that's such a difficult decision to have to like make. But I was like, well, that's what it's going to be.
Because it's not just about the money, is it? It's also about it's about keeping the business going. Like just getting handouts is great,
but keeping visible.
Yeah, absolutely. You've worked really, really hard over the last few years to get to where you are now, and things are it's going in a direction, and then to suddenly hit this year and pause. And it's difficult.
And not being in the right mental space to be able to continue pushing as I should have done, you know, online with my social media, like having a presence, keeping all of that going. I just had no capacity to do that because of everything else that we were going through.
It's not like at any point you there was no bounce back. There was no point in 2020 where like, oh, Rachel's back to her old self. That wasn't a thing.
Yeah, I just couldn't. No. I couldn't get there. As much as I tried, I really did. I just couldn't.
And within this, as part of growing your business, and this has always been part of the plan, you started doing your Patreon thing, which was great. I mean, it's a fantastic thing, and people have been supportive. But you're trying to do that and be there for people and be engaged, because all of that is about you being you and putting you out there. But
when you's broken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was really hard. Like, it's a really good example actually, Graham, because for my Patreon, my original plans were, this is a way of me being able to still engage with people, still keep creating stuff and having things there online. Okay. There was this kind of like, okay, well, what we'd normally do, we can't do physically in person. Let's just take it all online. Let's adapt to that. And generally, I think I'm quite an adaptable person, and I would totally have been up for that, like as a challenge. And I have all these ideas and had all these ideas. And it was like, this would be amazing. I could definitely do this if I had the capacity to do this, you know, mentally, psychologically, emotionally. I just wasn't in the right place at this point to be able to do what I wanted to, if you like, sort of like brain was willing, but the rest of me just couldn't do that. Cause it's a big ask anyway, like adapting everything you've done for the last like 6-7 years and changing it all completely, would have been a challenge anyway. But I think I just hadn't realized how tough that was going to be on top of everything else that was taking up so much of my energy and so much of my time. You know, it's all consuming. It really is trying to go through this kind of process at the same time as how do I hang on to my business? How do I keep this going? So it was lovely setting up the Patreon, and like I say, I had so many ideas for that, and I actually filmed like 5 or 6 videos ready, you know, and I got to the point where we were then going back through all of this, and I had no way of, I just physically couldn't, psychologically, mentally, I couldn't get to the point where I just couldn't deal with all of this stuff. So it meant that the things I'd wanted to do and to provide and start to create this library of resources and workshops and things that I was filming. And I'd done all of that part of it, but I just wasn't able to spend the days and hours, you know, and weeks putting them together to be in the right state to be able to get them out there. So yeah, so it's been hard because I hate letting people down. Obviously, you know, it's not something anybody wants to do, I know, but I found that very difficult. And I just felt like the whole time I felt like I was just making excuses, and I didn't want to be that person. I didn't want to be the person letting people down. I didn't want to be the person who it felt like, God, there's something wrong with Rachel every month, you know, and this isn't happening, and that's not happening, and expectations, you know, that I'd put out there thinking I could do this and then realized that I couldn't. So that was really hard to admit that, I think.
Yes, you are somebody, everything you've just said is so very true and so very Rachel, and you worry you worry hugely about letting people down, like to an excessive degree. You worry about letting people down, you worry a lot about these things, and so all of that is just pushing up stress levels at a time where having high stress levels is also...
You're supposed to be like the proper chilled out earth mother of like, just do not be stressed. You know, yeah. This is the time to put your feet up. And I'm like, are you bloody kidding me? We're in the middle of a pandemic. I'm turning 40 in like 4 months' time. We've run out of funding. I'm trying to hang on to my business. Oh my God, don't be stressed. How can you not be stressed?
Just don't be stressed, Rachel. could you just not? With that? Well, guys, it's so unreasonable to ask. So
I was like, oh... Honestly, if I could just switch it off, if I could just switch off sometimes as well. Yeah.
So you.
That's not a skill that I seem to have.
No. So you knew that you could start on the second round of IVF, but you didn't have to go all the way. Like, it didn't have to all be finished by the time you were 40, but you had to have started.
Thankfully.
On it. And they had to collect the eggs before. Is that pretty much where it got to with it? So, yeah, carry on, Rach, anyway.
That's all right. So in the end, what I realized also as part of that, like, pandemic and then the lockdown lifting and the Patreon thing as well, that actually is something that I discovered as I went along, that I learned as I went along, because I realized that, okay, the videos at this point, they're there, I've got the material, but I'm not going to be able to edit them and get them out. But what I can do is something virtually community based to make it feel for people who were supporting me and have continued to be super supportive, which is just incredible. I wanted to make sure that there was something, you know, they're getting something for their money, that there was something happening. So I thought about doing a virtual photo walks, and actually Christian, our friend, mm-hmm. Of the show, he talked about Discord, and we'd done a couple of kind of like early morning chats on that when he'd been out doing photo walks around his hometown. And I was like, this is such a beautiful idea and such a lovely way of connecting with people and the community and hearing other people on their photo walks doing that. And I thought, oh, this would be great, you know, this is something that I could run as part of Patreon each month or something, virtual photo walk. And then I thought, right, well, if I'm going to do this, I'd best leave the house for probably the first time since March and, you know, go and do a little photo walk and test it out and see how I feel. And it was horrendous. I was so anxious the whole time. I'd really lost my way in feeling like I could safely be outside and around people, even in an outdoor space. Like, it was just that anxiety was like through the roof. I mean, I guess looking reflecting on it, I could totally see why, like, rationally I was having that reaction to it. But people were just not giving me space. They were not, you know, I literally remember, like, I planted myself in the middle of a forest effectively in one of our lovely local parks, and people were still coming up to me like within a meter of me. And I was like, I knew that I was still going to be having to go in and out of hospital. I was like, this is just awful. Trying to take photos whilst be cheery, whilst kind of, you know, keeping the energy going of leading something like that, having that reaction to it, I thought, I just can't do this. This is just not going to work. It's not going to be fun for anybody, and it was going to stress me out. So in the end, I thought, well, what can I do that I can control a bit more? Because everything else is completely out of my control. So that's where I plumped for the idea of doing the virtual film development parties, because I was like, this is good. It means I can still shield. I can stay in the house. I don't have to then have that added stress of, oh God, am I taking something back into hospital when this happens again, or bringing it back out? We can do that. And I think actually that'd be really lovely, because I've got so many rolls of film, as you know, Graham, that have needed processing anyway. I say this would be really nice. Surely there's other people who are in a similar situation. In fact, I know that there are. So I was like, this will be a really nice way of still having that community connection, having something we can do each month, but that is a bit more controlled, and that I can go, okay, if I set the dates for this, when I'm feeling well enough, hopefully with a bit of consistency, as much as I could, keeping it to a Sunday afternoon, for the various different time zones, because we have people join us from all over the world, which is amazing. You know, I wanted to make it as accessible for people as possible. I've absolutely loved doing those. I really have. It's been fab. I wasn't able to do January's, unfortunately. We'll come on to that. I'm glad that I made that slight change, so that we could still keep that element of it, that community based, and still feeling like, you know, I was less isolated, that we could connect with other people was lovely. Without the stress that I'd found trying to do the virtual photo walk, just wasn't the right choice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an interesting bit of learning for me. I think I just tried to do too much too quick with that, and consequently then just felt like I was giving excuses and having to apologize the whole time, you know, rather, you know, than what I would ideally have wanted to do, which was for it to all be there and hit the ground running, and, you know, mm-hmm. I've got all these great ideas, like I said. I was like, yay, this would be a fantastic way of adapting the business to a certain extent, so I've got a platform that I can use there. That was the challenge of that. So we'd at this point started obviously the second round of drugs. So again, it was all back to the like timings and having to do it on the hour, and, you know, have the injections on the hour and all this kind of stuff. And we knew what we were letting ourselves in for this time, at least, I guess, you know, was the thing. It was like, okay, yep, stab me, you know, just all of that. It felt less scary in a way the second time, because at least the practical side of things, we knew what was expected, or what I'd have to do, or what I'd have to physically go through. But I still was not looking forward to the egg collection again, because I was like, I know what I've got to go through this time. Yeah. At least the first time round, I didn't know. So that was fun. Yay. So
was it three eggs they collected again the second time?
Yes. Yes, that's right. We had three again, and it was 11 months to the day of my first egg collection by this point. So it was a month before our birthday this time.
So we're in October now.
Yeah, and, in October.
It was kind of similar in a way that they moved pretty quickly on getting that first one implanted, didn't they?
Yeah.
So that was early October?
Yeah, mid-October.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, they found that one was growing correctly. Great, let's pop it back in. You know, that's the plan. If they can do it that way, then that's what they prefer to do. Because the previous time I'd had to have an operation as well to remove a lump inside and stuff as well. So, whereas obviously that happened previously, so I didn't need to do that again this time. They were like, let's just get that back in.
And when they do this, they're choosing and using what they believe to be the most viable egg first. So yes. First shot, best shot with these.
They're all graded. You know, they have, you know, and so yeah, they look at them and they go, this is your top chance. And I think that's also why it's quite hard, because you realize that if the top chance hasn't worked, you know, it gets harder to keep that hope and that faith in the next ones, if you like.
Yeah.
I've just realized my battery is going to die on the laptop because I haven't plugged it in.
Go and plug it in.
I have got the plug here.
Go and plug it in.
So give me just a second. Currently in the dark room at the moment, so just stepping my way over all my UV lamps and things to try and make sure I get plugged in.
Okay, you all sorted?
Right. Yes, yeah, good. Plugged in now.
So, so when did the implant happen then, Rach? Was the implant mid-October?
Yeah. So it was 5 days after the egg collection, yeah.
And then how long did you have to wait after that to find out?
So you have to wait 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's a little bit under that. It's like 11 days, but it feels like forever.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously so many, pretty much every month for 2 years, this has been our life. You have that period where you're like, got to wait 2 weeks to find out if this has worked or not or whatever. So, and it didn't work.
Yeah. And so we spoke at that time. So at this point, you had two eggs still left, but
frozen.
They were the frozen eggs, and they were the ones that you knew that they were viewed as less likely to take. But the good thing was that...
It's just frozen, Graham, sorry.
That's fine, yeah. It does that occasionally. You also knew, though, that you could take a break at that point, because essentially the clock had run out. It was just before your birthday. There wasn't any more treatments to happen after this, but the eggs that were frozen.
Yeah.
So, and this was just before we went back into lockdown in November, and you'd got a break away booked, didn't you? And so when we chatted about it, you said, look, you decided to give yourself some time and not just move straight on with the other embryos, and to wait until the new year to do that, and to go and take some time away. And where was it you went to, Rach?
We didn't go because the lockdown happened. So
the lockdown, so you didn't get to go. I don't know, why am I? Okay. So this is where the story is at the moment. Basically, like, this is the last chance saloon. You've got two unlikely frozen embryos, but you had at least decided to take a break from it. In any good story arc that has been nothing but tragedy up until this point, this is the point where you hope there's going to be a sudden twist for good. I sincerely hope you're not going to let me down here, Rach.
No. I'm not. We decided, right, this, we can't carry on like this. We need that break. I need to be able to at least enjoy in some way a weird 40th birthday in lockdown and Christmas, and just kind of get through this and forget about everything else for a while, and maybe we'll pick it up in the new year and have a think, you know, what are our options and things at that point. I was super lucky that Adam bought me a beautiful piano for my 40th birthday.
We talked about this because you sent me the video of him. He videoed you when he took you downstairs. He made you go upstairs whilst this ginormous piano brought him.
All I could hear were like three burly men downstairs huffing and puffing. And like, I was like, what the hell is going on?
Has he got me the Chippendales
downstairs
for my birthday?
I was like, really? It was honestly a complete surprise. I had no clue that I was getting this incredible piano, and it's from Berlin from like 1916. It's just a beautiful. And it was just the most perfect gift, like just so beautiful and unexpected. And music, I realized do you know, I was thinking about this the other day, I realised how little music I've had around me for ages now. You know, again, it's just, it's been one of those things that's just not been a priority. It's not been something that I've been thinking about. And I hadn't realised, I don't think, until then, how much I've missed having it in my life, how much I've missed just having it around. And it was this beautiful piano. I can't play the piano, by the way.
They've dried up lately. I hope your practicing is still going on, but you know, we'll come to that. Yeah. But you sent me videos going, oh, I'm so bad. And I'm watching it. You've had this piano for 5 minutes. And all right, you're not great.
5 days.
Five days. You're not great. I'm not going to say you're great. But for 5 days, pretty amazing. Bear in mind that I tried learning the piano once, and after 5 months, I was still at, you know, and I never got any better than that. Anyway, yeah, the video of you getting your piano was one of the most amazing things. It was great.
Yeah, because I came downstairs, and at one point the night before, I'd walked past the dining room and found Adam sitting in one half of the room with all the furniture piled around him. And I was just like, okay, do I ask a question? No, I'll just ignore it. It's fine. Like, I don't know what is going on, but fine.
Standard Adam, really, isn't it? He's prone to these things.
Yeah, exactly. But it turns out there was a reason, which was the fact that obviously he needed somewhere for it to be placed, to be put. It was... It is a good little video. When I watched it back, it made me chuckle. But yeah, unsurprisingly, I was in floods of tears.
Oh, absolute floods.
over this. But yeah, it was just lovely to have something like that that felt creative and that wasn't there was no pressure. Like, it's okay if I'm rubbish at the piano. It doesn't really matter, you know? Like, there's no pressure there with it. It was just something nice to be able to like try and enjoy. And I thought, oh, how lovely it would be to do that. You know,
I'm
not
passing
any exams or tests or anything. Yeah. It was just like, I could just sit at it and I don't have to like my violin. I don't have to like get it out. I don't have to like prep for it and get it all ready. It's just, I lift the lid and it's there. So it was nice because it was easy to kind of do that. And so I have tried since then every day. Like, I obviously played it loads that first week because I actually had taken a week off to enjoy my birthday and, you know, and just have a little bit of a break. But I've tried to do just 5 minutes, which I know is rubbish, but like, even if I just get my fingers on the piano for 5 minutes each day, it's just helped. It really has helped to do that, I think, and just feel like, oh yeah, music. I've totally forgot about this, and it's just lovely to have that back in my life, really.
It was so nice to see, like, you getting joy from something, because that is something that has been completely absent from 2020 for you. It wasn't. Yeah. Whenever I saw you on video or saw pictures, and just there was an absence of joy in your life, and that piano brought it back.
Yes. Yeah.
Well done, Adam. Five stars to Adam.
Five stars.
The rest of us partners look bad.
Yeah. But yeah, like, I think the thing is with photography, it wasn't that doesn't bring me joy and wasn't bringing me joy, but it was just that I didn't have that capacity to be able to put into going out and shooting, you know, with the camera or... even thinking about that, it felt too, I think it just felt also too close to work, you know, whereas obviously this is something separate, completely separate.
It's timing as well, isn't it, Rach? As you were saying, this was just after you'd made the decision that you were going to just stop all of this and give yourself some months where you... Yeah. Because there's no more chasing to be done. There's no more. Yeah. There's nothing more you can do. You have these two frozen embryos in the future that you can go back to. Yeah. You could actually just go, okay, there's no point in me worrying about what I can and can't do, because that's it for now. You actually gave yourself space to allow you to feel something other than stress about all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And I then got to the end of November and I'd actually booked in like a little massage with my friend because, you know, and we realized that because of lockdown, wouldn't be able to go and do that. And I thought, oh no, it was 2 days before. That's right. It was 2 days before lockdown came in. So I was due to go and have that. And I thought this will be a nice little bit of self-care, bit of, you know, a treat mm-hmm. for me as part of my birthday thing, you know, I thought, oh, this will be fancy. And just to have a little bit of time to relax, I guess, you know, and things. And I realized that I was late for my period and I thought it's just my body sorting itself out from the last battering that it's had. I took a test in the morning that I was due to go for my massage and there was a double blue line. So yeah, like you say, in the big arc, story arc, very surprised. I don't even know how to describe like the shock of the fact that that was the first time obviously I'd seen, you know, those two blue lines since the previous January, you know. I was like, so this, Adam. And he was like, okay, well, you know, don't get too excited and stuff, because
yeah,
absolutely right, you know. And I couldn't either, you know. I wasn't feeling like that at that point. It was more, my immediate thought was, huh. And then, okay, I need to like make sure I don't freak out about this too much, you know. I just need to keep calm and insulate myself, protect myself, basically.
Yeah, we know how bad things got last year. We know how bad it was, and to avoid, it's one of those things, isn't it? You can try and insulate yourself, but but you basically did your best to kind of go, well, I'm not going to allow hope to happen at this point,
which is horrible, isn't it? Really,
it's like, really stinks. Hope should be the one thing we're allowed to have. I viewed my position in all of this is I'm just going to keep hoping blindly because that's what I can do. I'll do the hoping so you don't have to.
Exactly. So that and that's what I needed. I just needed occasional messages from you being like, it's all going to be right. It's all going to be fine. It's going to be, because I couldn't allow myself to tell myself that, you know, and I didn't believe other people, you know, because they didn't know everything that we'd been through, you know. And I have to say, we didn't really allow ourselves to think about that. But I rang up the consultant and said, so this, and they went, oh, okay.
Right before Christmas.
Yeah.
Plandemic.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, well, I'll try and squeeze you in so we can have a scan, do a scan and see. And it fell on the day before Christmas Eve this time.
Yeah, this was at 6 weeks, wasn't it, Rach?
Yeah. And so it was, 23rd of December. And like, I don't know if you can, but like trying to kind of like imagine what that weight was like, knowing what happened on Christmas Eve last year, the year before. It was just honestly like one of the hardest periods of time to get through, I have to say. And there was very little sleep, you know, for any of those couple of weeks waiting for us to be able to go and have this scan and stuff. So we went in and they found a heartbeat and they could see the heartbeat and they couldn't get the machine to play the heartbeat to begin with, because it was a new machine. The consultant chap said, like, no, don't worry. I'm going to send out, we'll get somebody who knows how to operate this because you've waited long enough to hear this. Which is the sweetest thing.
I was, because this was just for Christmas, I was in a car park in Whitney. I'd been out Christmas shopping, and, you know, I don't think any of us were feeling particularly joyous before Christmas this year.
Not
anyway.
Christmas, no.
And no. I got my phone buzzed, and you sent me a video, and I sat in my van for probably a good 10 minutes just blubbing. Like an absolute baby. You wrecked me with that. It's hearing
it was
that
amazing.
Hearing that heartbeat going was just, it was the most amazing thing. It was amazing.
Yeah, it really was. Oh God, what we like. That was just wonderful, and then brought a whole new level of anxiety with it, because is this going to continue? You know, like, at that point it was like, I just want to get through that and know that that's okay. And then there was a sort of 3-month gap of, well, what, it felt like 3 months. Where are we now? End of
it was only a month and a bit, but it very much felt, because that was at 6 weeks, and normally people would get their second scan at 12 weeks, but because of stuff,
the pandemic,
you end up at 13 weeks. And
yeah,
and like, through all of this, despite the fact that there was a heartbeat, you have still been in the not allowing yourself to hope because of the quite justifiable fear of losing all of this.
Yeah.
So actually, as the scan approached, it was worry more than excitement that was driving all of this through. Was 2 weeks ago. That you had the 13-week scan.
Yep, that's right. 15 weeks today.
15 weeks today. Everything's looking fantastic. You're looking fantastic. Your belly is already looking very baby filled. It's amazing.
There's a mini sunbeam.
There's a mini sunbeam in there. And it's just, I was talking to my mum about this at Christmas. I saw them and I said, all I want from 2021 is for this to be okay and for this to go through. It's just, it's amazing. I could not be happier for you, Rach. I really couldn't. It's,
you did make me laugh. I mean, all the way through, you've been just the best support. The person that I've needed there as that support, you know, as that, my podcast brother, you know, I'm your pod sister. But you made me laugh so much with that message. Like, as far as I'm concerned, we're having this baby. Mm-hmm. I told Adam, obviously, he was like, oh yeah, I figured, you know.
Yeah.
But just being that, that voice of just those messages saying it's going to be fine. I have absolutely all the confidence that, like a Brewster Wright, is going to be healthy and happy. And that was just what I needed to hear, because, I needed that. So thank you so much.
I can't
underestimate what that meant. It really can't. And actually going and having the scan, and I wasn't prepared for the worst, because
you can't
be. But I didn't believe it, I think, until I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a baby-shaped baby.
It was a baby-shaped
oh my God.
Baby.
Yeah, because the last time I'd seen it, it looked like a little tiny gummy bear.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually don't think I wasn't expecting it to look like a person, I think.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that scan 2 weeks ago, I think that is when you and Adam started accepting that you're going to have a baby. It's like, you're going to be a mum. He's going to be a dad. This is going to happen. Because until then, you just...
Oh, my God.
You hadn't allowed yourself to say those words. You hadn't allowed yourself to think those thoughts. You hadn't started... You weren't thinking about the future. You weren't thinking about baby names. You weren't thinking about what you do next. None of that. And then And then you can then suddenly, and you then you can start telling more, because you know you told yours and Adam's parents at Christmas, but you said to me that, you know, their response was muted because, again, like me, they'd seen how
they saw us last Christmas.
They saw last Christmas. Mm-hmm. They saw how devastating that was for you, and how long term and how brutal the impact of that was, and they were understandably afraid that it's going to happen again. So,
yep.
To be able to,
absolutely, and I think there is obviously for us an element still of, you know, we can't be like, should I say, what normally people would do. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I got the lines and brilliant, and there's not even necessarily a consideration of all the rest of it, if you like, which is wonderful, and I would wish that for everybody. You know, that is how it should be, right?
Yeah.
But there is still a long way to go, you know, for us. And so that's just something that is there at the back of my mind, and that those waits between scans, I think, are just going to be tough. Like for us, for me, you know, they're going to be hard. And yeah, who knows what the future will bring, I guess. But I'm holding on to this lovely bubble of hope and happiness for as long as I possibly can. And it's been so lovely to, like, effectively, we've known for a week, like we've had a week to kind of get our heads around the feeling happy part of this, you know, and feeling excited. And I finally allowed myself to buy some maternity jeans, you know, because I actually ended up having to get them like a few days before the scan. And I was like, I know it sounds so stupid, but it was one of those where I was like, I don't want to have to order them before, because I don't know.
It was a crazy thing. You sent me a picture at 12 weeks. You sent me a picture of a quite visible tummy going on there. But it's like, oh, but what if like, there's a whole tummy thing. Also, I mean, and this is the main reason why you haven't been on the podcast much lately. You have been feeling so sick all the time.
So sick.
It was even my morning sickness. You've had full on all day sickness, all the time sickness.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, we're coming back to the point really of why I've been AWOL for 3 months at least, you know, and in general in 2020 was so much quieter and less around and things. But yeah, that's why, especially more recently, the sickness has been so bad. It really has. And I mean, thankfully I haven't been hospitalized with it, which does happen to some women. But I also hadn't realized quite how debilitating it would be to just feel constantly sick rather than actually being sick.
Because it sounds so much fun.
Well, yeah. But I don't know. You kind of go, oh, feeling sick all the time. Like, what's the big deal with that? But it is like, you can't focus. You cannot focus on anything. You can't concentrate. You can't focus. You just, and you don't even have the like the after bit of feeling like, oh, well, I feel better now I've been sick. Do you know what I mean? It's just constant that level. So, you know, the majority of women have to go through some level of this. So I don't want to go on about it, you know, but it was just, oh gosh, this is a whole other thing where I can't work properly. You know, I can't function properly. And trying to like figure out how to balance this now, obviously, such a lot later on, everybody being like, so sick of lockdown, just want to get back to normal. And I'm feeling so behind with so many things, if you like, because of obviously everything we talked about over the last hour and a half, whatever it's been, you know, that whole idea of trying to keep up with, oh, I'm going to learn a new language and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to adapt my entire business and take it online. I still haven't been able to do that to the extent that I would have wanted to. If things had been different with all of this, then I think I would be in a different place now with the business.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been what it's been, and I'm not there with it in the same way, but I hope I'll get there. It might just be a bit later. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a bit longer. I was going to say ironic thing, but one of the things that did start to help me a bit earlier on last year, well, sort of like in between the two lots of treatment and things, was walking past the small bedroom, and because I just hadn't been able to look at it, I hadn't been able to like think about it or do anything, you know, that involved that room. Mm-hmm. I think, and one of the nice things was turning it into a functioning proper like dark room for me whilst I was mm-hmm. at home and in lockdown, and so I got somewhere I could prep all my things for Ilford and, you know, that kind of stuff really. So it was just nice to have that space. And so the ironic thing is, obviously, I'm going to lose my dark room now.
I think, you know, dev trays make great cribs. That's all I'm going to say. Just,
what's
you know,
that?
A dev tray would make a great crib. Think yeah. like the red light,
white
nice
room.
Warm. It'd be such a, it's just such a lovely, comforting environment. I just need to leave it as it is. Leave it as it is.
You reckon?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, to be fair, I did buy like a pop-up sink thing. It just, I don't have like the proper draining on it and yeah. stuff, but changing table done.
A big, know, yeah, so, precisely. Precisely. It's a multi-function room. It'd be great. Hang all your, you know, all your negatives hanging to dry. That's basically
mobile.
Yeah, this right. it all works out perfectly, right? It'll
yeah, all those camera bags with all those extra pockets, perfect changing.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, it's all gonna just fit in your lovely space. Ah, well, you've got yeah. a while yet. You've got a while yet.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah. So that's where we're at.
That's where we're at.
That's where we're at. And I even saw. Finally, actually saw a real life person this morning called a midwife. So that's a new thing. It was lovely. And we've told Marcy and she doesn't care. The dog.
Oh, so, she will.
Yeah, I'm sure she will. Yeah. So that's the other thing. I'm like, oh man, we're going to have to introduce so many things. Like, I don't know how she's going to take it, bless her.
Because obviously, great.
That was the other thing. Like, in December, Marcy went through awful surgery for her because she had a thyroid tumor, and we were not sure whether she was going to still be with us. So this was all happening in the midst of us not knowing about anything either. So yeah, it was like, oh well, that's just brilliant. But thankfully they did a great job. The vets are brilliant, and yeah, they that we've got a sort of like checkup scan for her in March. So yeah, all good at the moment. So.
2021 is looking like it's going to be a significantly better year than 2020. 2020, for everybody, but for you especially, is a year that I think is best consigned to the scrap heap. But
and yeah, now the main thing for me to worry about next is my weddings that mm-hmm. have been postponed from last year, which obviously we'll be shooting this year and this summer, in my third trimester, so that's going to be in July. If it's a summer like last year, it was flipping hot.
Mm-hmm.
Gonna be fun. I'm just not gonna be as nimble.
Yeah,
I think is the thing. So let's see how that goes. I guess
I've already offered to bring a wheelbarrow up, Rach. We'll get you yeah. around those places. It'll be fine.
You'll wheel me around.
It'll
yeah,
be
exactly.
fine.
So yeah.
And I suppose going forward, as far as for our listeners and you on the podcast, obviously, when you can and it makes sense and you feel good, you'll be there.
Yeah,
and when you can't, you won't because, so.
Yeah, it's honestly, I'm hoping people know this. It's not that I've not been willing. It's just simply that I have, you don't want to hear me being sick a lot, you know?
No, hard no.
Instead. That's not a pleasant podcast to listen to. And yeah, the reason that we're doing this in the morning, well, it's sort of early afternoon now, mm-hmm. is because this is the only time really when I'm functioning at the moment as a person. I can feel myself flagging that, I have to say. But I've been told, you know, when's Google ever been wrong, right? But I've been told that it should be settling down in the next couple of weeks. So fingers crossed, I might be able to get back to doing some of the evening recordings with the rest of the team at some point soon. So yeah, I've got plans obviously for the next Underexposed, hopefully. And yeah, there's all sorts of things kind of coming up generally with the photography and things. So I'm really looking forward to what's going to be happening, you know, from that side of things, of course, from sort of, you know, March, April time onwards. I've got some nice plans. And yeah, and then the other adventure will be continuing, I hope, obviously. Yeah, we'll see. I forgot to mention I did do a small photographic project during the period of time that we were going through mm-hmm. the treatment and things. And at this point I've just sort of put it to one side because I need to be in a different headspace, I think. Mm-hmm. I need to, like I say, hang on to all the happiness and all of the positivity that I possibly can.
Yeah.
And the good vibes. But those negatives are there. You know, I documented some of my trips into hospital and some of the treatment and that kind of thing. And yeah, it's there. And at some point I might revisit it when it's the right point. So but that's pretty much the only photographic project. Obviously that was a personal project that I've been able to do. But I did for my 40th birthday, some lovely people put in some money towards I wanted to get like a special camera, something to mark, you know, mark that decade, the new decade by. And I got myself, as I know that you mentioned obviously uh-huh. on the podcast, got myself a lovely Leica 3A. I've shot one roll through it, which I have not yet processed. So
upcoming dev party, I am sure.
Well, that was actually my plan. That was my plan. And I was thinking, this would be lovely. I'll get it shot. I'll see if it's worked. I'll process it in the January dev party and then super sick. So unfortunately January didn't happen and I hadn't yet, because I've still been feeling really bad, haven't yet set February, so we'll see. It might just be an extra few weeks, but looking forward to seeing whether it's worked.
Yeah, I'm sure it's been fantastic, Rachel. That looked like a really nice camera. It looked really nice. We should stop this because you've been sat in one space for a very long time and because you may be starting to get a little uncomfortable now, and also you probably need to go off and start feeling sitting quietly in a corner.
Got my crackers and got my fizzy water and stuff. Honestly, like that whole side of things, mad. Like what you suddenly like or don't like, very weird. Carrots, I'm eating but carrots by the ton. Can't drink tea. What? I haven't been able to drink tea for months.
Oh my god.
Like, months. It's so weird. I got a beautiful teapot for my birthday. Can't use it.
That's no good, right?
I know.
Unforeseen consequences. Well, yeah. I hope we get to see you more frequently on the show, as I'm sure our listeners do. But what a couple of years.
Yeah. And I just, before we do finish up, I absolutely want to say thank you. Like a massive, massive thank you to everybody who knows us, knows me in the podcast, through the photographic industry world. Although I haven't been able to talk about this and it just wasn't quite the right time earlier on, I hope you understand at least a little bit more about the reasons why now. And regardless of that, I've had so many lovely, lovely messages from people who I've not been able to answer properly, you know, just check in, see if I'm okay. And I've definitely still felt like that love and support has just been there the whole time. It's been really hard for me, like, to not really be able to talk about it. So yeah, this whole chat, this whole conversation has been quite personal. Well, very personal, obviously, but more than I was thinking it might be, but also really, really lovely to do, to finally be able to explain everything and to tell you what's been going on. So yeah, having that support and those messages and things has been lovely. And I know that and also it means that you can stop hounding Graham now, because I think that's the real reason that he wanted me to come and do this recording, because he's just been hounding, like, where is she? Like, I just went AWOL for so long.
It's been so hard. I mean, obviously it was so hard last year, because obviously, you know, we didn't want to say to the listeners, yeah, Rachel's not here because she's in a really bad place at the moment, because that's not what you want to tell people. And it's also, we didn't want to, but since the day you found out, since those blue lines, oh my god, it's been killing me, especially since Christmas. I'm like, god, how are you expecting me not to tell everybody? Oh, Rachel's not here. I mean, you have been super busy with work also, but most of that's just been a barefaced lie. You've made me into a liar. I was already a liar, but that's by the by.
You do it so much better than me, though.
But you know what? Honestly, I would still I would a thousand times over go through the last 2 years of having to make up excuses and lie and stuff to end up at the point we're at now, where we can just share this news and be happy about it.